Hey there, listeners. Galen here. I just wanted to let you know that we recorded this podcast before the news broke that Amy Klobuchar would be dropping out of the Democratic primary and endorsing Joe Biden. So we do mention her as though she's still in the race, but just know that she's not. All right, here you go. Hello and welcome to the 538 Politics Podcast. I'm Galen Druk. Tomorrow is the big day. 14 states and American Samoa will cast their votes on Super Tuesday with 1,357 delegates up for grabs. That's a third of all the delegates available in the Democratic primary race, and only 155 delegates have been awarded up until now. So just as a point of comparison, we're going to preview where the race stands in those states and nationally. We're also going to talk about a notable dropout this weekend. Sunday night, Pete Buttigieg got out of the race saying, quote, "We have a responsibility to consider the effect of remaining in this race any further." He did not refer to any candidates by name in his concession speech, although I'm sure listeners can get the subtext. Here with me to discuss are editor-in-chief Nate Silver. How's it going, Nate?
It's going well.
Also here with us is senior politics writer Claire Malone. How are you?
I'm good.
And managing editor Micah Cohen. How are you?
Very nice. Thank you.
Everyone psyched for Super Tuesday? It's going to be a late night.
Do you think, are the Girl Scout cookies Samoas?
Yeah,
they are,
I think
right?
They are.
Are they named after like American Samoa? Like, why are they called that?
You know, I don't know. Any Girl Scouts listening to the 538 Politics podcast, please message us if
because
you know.
Because it is Girl Scout cookie season.
Right, but I don't think that's why American Samoa is having a caucus, though.
Yeah, but are Samoas the gross ones?
No, they're the, aren't they the coconut and caramel
ones? No, they're the good ones.
Yeah,
they're
the,
are.
Yeah, I mean, not that the other ones aren't good, but they're the probably the best.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
so right. The winner of the Iowa caucuses is out before Super Tuesday. Let's begin with Buttigieg's decision to get out of the race. Claire, why did he get out now?
Well, myriad reasons. One, he doesn't really have a path forward. You know, I think in a lot of ways, Pete Buttigieg's campaign sort of saw the writing on the wall early and made a deft pivot. He kind of started off as one of these like more progressive campaigns. He was kind of on the young woke train along with a lot of the senators. And then about halfway through, he was like, oop, and basically like flipped a Yui and was like, actually, I'm moderate, and stopped talking about a lot of the kind of systemic change things he was talking about and really kind of doubled down on I'm a unity candidate, blah, blah, blah. So he ended up being a candidate who was largely focused on Iowa and New Hampshire, in part because he was a new name and that was an easy place to make a splash, but also didn't have much appeal outside of white voters, didn't really do that well in non-white states. And I think knew that post-South Carolina life would only get more difficult for him on that front, and I think probably does have his future in the party to consider. He is no longer the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, though forever in our hearts, Mayor Pete, I suppose.
Good branding. When you got a brand, you got to stick with it.
But I think he probably feels a certain amount of pressure not to be like an asshole spoiler candidate, and so if you get out at a time when you can maybe make an endorsement of someone who perhaps Joseph Robinette Biden, who might be kind of the stop Bernie candidate, and maybe Pete is angling for an eventual position on, cabinet perhaps, given that there's not really many statewide offices he could run for Indiana. I've talked too long. I'm pulling a Silver here.
So segueing from that, how does his exit from the race affect the other candidates, given your mention of a possible endorsement and not wanting to be a spoiler?
I mean, first of all, I got a plan for Mayor Pete. Run for another mayorship. Run for another mid-sized Midwestern town. Ann Arbor, Michigan, Mayor Christopher Taylor should be shaking in his boots.
So he can just be kind of like he's like a traveling mayor. Just like a mercenary mayor?
Mercenary mayor, yeah.
All right.
Yeah. If you don't like your mayor, call Pete.
West Lafayette, Indiana, you're getting a new mayor. Pete Buttigieg.
Okay, getting serious, what effect does his exit from the race have on the other candidates and their chances of winning the nomination?
So there are kind of two levels of this. One is that it has some effects on the delegate math, where you have Bernie Sanders, who's a national frontrunner, or at least was pre-South Carolina, and has a pretty broad coalition where he was going to get at least 15% in almost every state and congressional district. And that matters because you need 15% to qualify for state or district delegates. You had a bunch of other candidates who were kind of flirting on either borderline of 15%. So both Bloomberg and Warren are very close to 15% nationally, and Biden's mostly above 15%, but in his weaker states might be below it. And so the fact that you now have Mayor Pete's 10% distributed to the other candidates means that it helps the other candidates get above 15%. As a result, that makes it less likely that Bernie has a runaway margin.
And so do we expect that support to be split up evenly across the candidates or to go disproportionately to other moderates like Biden or maybe Bloomberg?
I mean, here's where the context matters, right? Our model basically takes that 10% and divides it evenly between the top 4.5 candidates.
Who's the half?
Klobuchar.
Oh, okay.
In the context, I mean, there actually is like a lot of Buttigieg-Klobuchar overlap, but she's not doing very well. And so, but anyway, let's just say that like you take that support and divide it among the 5 non-Gabbard candidates evenly, which might be a decent assumption ordinarily, right? But you have this dropout occurring in the context of the moderate lane consolidating around Biden. Now, all of a sudden, you have a lot of, at the very least, you have a lot of undecided voters who have just heard a lot of good news about Biden. And there's a chance that by the time you're listening to this or not, we don't know, that there may be an endorsement of Biden, right? You know, I think there is a lot of upside for Biden here, more than our model shows,
okay,
which already gives Biden a bounce for South Carolina, but I think this is a pretty good development for Joe Biden.
I agree with that, but you can understand why the model might think that you divide it evenly. Like, every candidate has something going for him or her. You know, Warren has a lot of college-educated support, just like Buttigieg. Sanders is the most popular in the race, so he would get his share. Biden is in the moderate lane, just like Buttigieg.
Yeah, and the polling's a bit ambiguous.
But isn't that a little bit like everyone gets a ribbon? Aren't people like Klobuchar and Warren?
Klobuchar's Midwest. That was the last one. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like, aren't they in many ways sort of like essentially out of the running?
Yeah,
as
people
far as
know. I think voters know. They get a sense that they want to pick somebody who has a shot, right?
No, I think that's right. And that's why I started by saying I think the most upside is for Biden. Mm-hmm.
Okay. However, in Minnesota and Massachusetts, respectively,
exactly,
then the two home state senators are the best shot
sure.
if you do want to not have Bernie be nominated. The thing, but Micah made the point about the model, like, it is an approximation. And in theory, you're like, okay, we're going to use some relatively conservative priors because in 3 or 4 days, we'll have enough polling to sort it out via the polling, right? In this case, we're going to get hardly any polling. I mean, very little polling post-South Carolina, even less polling that's post Mayor Pete dropout. So it's kind of like directionally, I think the model is right that like that Biden's chances are way up. But are we overestimating, underestimating?
We have a lot to get through, so we're going to move on to the state of the race nationally and Super Tuesday. But because this is the first time this is happening, that somebody drops out of the race who actually has delegates, for listeners' edification, what happens when somebody who has delegates drops out of the race? What happens to their delegates?
It depends. Their district delegates they keep. Now, those delegates are selected by the campaigns, and, you know, Mayor Pete could instruct the delegates to vote for Biden or Warren or whomever they want. They don't have to go along. In fact, they never have to go along with anything. The delegates are actually all free agents.
I would just be like, I'm doing whatever I want. Don't tell me what to do.
But Mayor Pete wouldn't pick you if you're that type of personality.
But I'd be like a sleeper cell.
Oh, maybe.
He wouldn't know.
Manchurian Claire.
Anyway, continue. I have a problem with authority.
But all right, okay. Some delegates are reallocated. The delegates that you get at the statewide level, which is about a third of the total, are reallocated to other candidates depending on when you drop out. If you drop out before those delegates are chosen, then automatically those get reallocated to the candidates who are also viable. And so already in our delegate tracker, I think other news organizations have not done this yet, you have Mayor Pete losing like 6 of the delegates he got, which I think go like 3 or 4 of them go to Bernie, 1 goes to Biden, and like 2 to Warren or something. So we're already accounting for that. And that could be a factor later on. Like, let's say that Michael Bloomberg gets 300 delegates on Super Tuesday, you know, 100 of those could be reallocated if he were to drop out later. Now, there are things like you could suspend your campaign and not formally drop out and say, I want to make sure I get my delegates, right?
And then casually direct them to do whatever you want at the convention.
Yeah, I mean, why not, right? You have more leverage that way. Or you also might decide, okay, well, you can do the math and say, okay, I'm Michael Bloomberg. If I were to drop out, I do well in the same states Biden does. Therefore, 60 would go to Biden, 30 to Bernie, and 10 to Warren. Actually, let's go ahead and give those to Biden as pledge delegates because I want Biden to win. And therefore, so he has some optionality there.
And we'll probably dig into that more as more candidates drop out in the future. But let's move on and talk about the state of the race nationally and in Super Tuesday states. But first, today's podcast is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Hiring used to be hard. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy, and you only have to go to one place to get it done. ZipRecruiter.com/538. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job sites, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. You can even add screening questions to your job listing so you can filter candidates and focus on the best ones. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Right now, try ZipRecruiter for free. Listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/538. That's ZipRecruiter.com/538. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. We're back, and before we get into the specifics of the Super Tuesday states, let's set the table with where the race stands nationally. So the big question is whether Biden's surge in South Carolina was a state-specific event or whether he was surging nationally and we just didn't have up-to-date polling showing that surge. So, Micah, what's the answer?
Well, I mean, we had polling showing him surging.
Nationally?
I mean, surging is a, I guess, a vague word, but let me
We didn't have national polling showing Biden up before South Carolina.
Yeah.
We didn't have national
polls. No, okay. Yeah, yeah. I guess the polls were mostly just showed him up in South Carolina. So you're right. We don't know that Biden has surged nationally yet at all, really. I mean, stuff is just moving way too quickly. Events are unfolding faster than polls can capture them. How confident should we be that Biden is up nationally and like Bloomberg is down? I think we should be relatively confident.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
But I do also think that if this had been, if like North Carolina were the state that voted instead of South Carolina fourth in the primary line of things, I'm not necessarily sure Biden would have done as well, right? Like Biden is really dug in with South Carolina politics. He goes on vacation there. He has tended to this particular state in a very particular way. So it was basically like I think Clyburn kind of putting the endorsement out and deciding like, I am going to give Joe this extra boost right before. God bless. Here's 30 points as a walkaway win, whatever. But I do think Biden is probably, if moderate voters or pragmatic, quote unquote, pragmatic Democratic voters are seeing Sanders be labeled by, you know, people like us as it's his race to lose. He's the front runner. Well, that starts to make people nervous about the general election. And then they kind of go back to the Biden well and they say, is he so bad? Does it matter that he sometimes steps on his words? Whatever. So it kind of makes sense to me that as Sanders rises, so too does the anxiety of the moderate Democratic voter who's been trying to choose a bunch of other different people.
I think that's totally right. And I think that partly explains why you saw some movement towards Biden in South Carolina before the debate, after Nevada, before the debate. The other thing I would say, just as evidence that Biden is up nationally and we just don't know it because we don't have polls, is he's gotten a bump in more than just South Carolina. He's up in Virginia. He's up in North Carolina. He's up in California.
Not up in California. He's improved in California. He's still
Sorry,
he's not quite winning a bit behind.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Sorry, he's improved in all those.
Are you
states.
Talking about the recent polling, or their odds according to our model?
I'm talking about our polling averages.
Okay. So just to ask this, right now our polling average shows Sanders at 29% nationally, Biden at 17% nationally, Bloomberg at 15%, and Warren at 13%. Should we more or less disregard that and basically say we don't have enough recent data in order to feel that that shows a good picture of the race?
Yeah, so we don't know post-South Carolina national polls. So the model makes some inferences about guessing at the size of the bounce, and it would have it more like, I think it's like roughly add 3 or 4 points to Biden, take 2 away from Bernie. So it would have it like Biden 21, Sanders 26 or 27. That's probably its guess of what a national poll would say right now.
Okay.
Except they'll both gain some points from Buttigieg, so maybe it thinks it's like Sanders 30, Biden 23 or 24.
And are we going to get much more data before people vote?
We're going to get a little, but clearly not enough that would constitute like – I mean, you basically need like 4 or 5 new polls after an event happens for you to chuck out your prior, right, and say, okay, that's enough data now where we have a solid average. And we're going to get – we might get 1 or 2 national polls. And what you don't get, by the way, you don't get like the so-called gold standard ABC Washington Post, Quinnipiac, NBC Wall Street Journal type telephone polls, because they usually take 3 or 4 days. They're very uncomfortable going in the midst of like a one-day news environment, right? So you're going to get mostly online IVR, you know, text kind of polls, and they can tell you something. But, you know, we're not going to have like big national numbers come out before Super Tuesday. So, but again, the margins of error are very wide here. Would it surprise me if you did have polls come out? Would it surprise me if an NBC Wall Street Journal poll had Biden 32, Sanders 32 tied? No, that wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me if it still had Sanders 9 points ahead. There's a lot of guesswork that we aren't going to be able to resolve before Super Tuesday.
In some ways, does that mean that we should expect the results on Super Tuesday to be off from the polling averages that we have just
sure.
because there hasn't been a lot of data input?
Well, yeah, that's why our model is at least giving Biden some credit for a bounce, number one, and it increases the uncertainty. So we have really wide confidence intervals on our forecast. Like, let me go to California here, for example. So Sanders forecasted for 34% of the vote, but there's a range between 28 and 40, and that range only covers 80% of the outcomes. Likewise, Biden ranged between 19 and 30%. So note now that actually Biden's high end of his range in California overlaps with the low end of Bernie's range. It's not very likely. It's not very likely, but like, it's now possible that you'd have
where. Okay, so we really are flying somewhat blind here. Where would you guys put the net? And look, this is like guesswork, intuition, so take all this with a grain of salt. But where would you put the national numbers right now? Again, we have Sanders 29, Biden 17, Bloomberg 15, Warren 13, Klobuchar 5.
I think Biden is probably a bit higher than 17% in my...
And Bloomberg lower and Warren lower. I would guess
that you've seen support fall away from the non-Sanders and Biden candidates because
yeah.
I think it's pretty clear to people at this point, especially after Buttigieg dropping out,
yeah.
that's what the race looks to be.
And I think that, yeah, and that's a strong signal to voters from Buttigieg, I think. I'm kind of curious if Mike Bloomberg... if he sort of doesn't do very well on Super Tuesday, if he then drops out.
Oh, I'm like so convinced he's going to really underperform his polls on Super Tuesday that I've begun to doubt myself because.
But do you think he would drop out and endorse Biden if he didn't do well on Super Tuesday, given that that's where he's done his investment?
I think so.
You would imagine.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
But
yeah.
I don't know. It's hard to say because I would have never expected him to get in the race in the first place.
Yeah,
I would have expected him to give Biden money and whatever.
I mean, it's our kind of like the takeaway of this is basically like, yeah, people are changing their minds right now as we speak. There aren't that many polls in the field. And Wednesday morning, probably very early morning, I think the shape of the race will have, you know, it will have cinched in a little bit. It will have... The race will have shapewear, and it will be directing
itself. Wait, what's shapewear?
Kim Kardashian's shapewear.
What is shapewear? Oh, Micah.
Okay, so this is the part where our podcast switches over to the paid premium content. And if you would like to hear Claire and I talk about shapewear in the context of the Democratic primary, go to our Patreon. No, I'm kidding. We don't have one. We don't
shapewear
have one.
Is the modern girdle.
It's like Spanx?
Yes.
Yeah.
I would say it's like Sanders, 31, Biden, 26, 27, Bloomberg, 7-8, Warren, 7-8.
All right, we're going to hold you to it.
You don't have enough votes there.
Well, I think there are a lot of undecided.
I think
people.
It's like...
No, that's national polling average.
I think it's like Sanders and Biden both at 32.
Oh, interesting.
I think Sanders is still ahead.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, as Claire said, we're going to find out what the shape of the race looks like Wednesday morning, which is even more of a reason that people should tune in and check out our live blog and follow us.
Yeah.
Guys, that's an exciting day.
Tune into our live blog tomorrow, but also check out on the site right now. We have this really awesome tool that lets you predict who's going to win each state on Super Tuesday, and it'll show you how the odds change overall depending on that result. For example, if you assume that Sanders is going to win California, his chances of winning a majority of delegates increase from 22% to only 23.7%.
Because well, that's because it's expected.
It's largely
but
baked
if
in.
If Biden wins California, it goes from 13 to 43.
Okay, how about this, though? Give California to Bernie, but give Texas to Biden, and his chances increase from 11% to 17% over Sanders.
Yeah.
All right, so go check that out. But let's get into the specifics of Super Tuesday and give listeners a preview in the states they're going to be voting. So as I mentioned, a third of all the delegates are at stake. And we're going to go through this by region, but to give you the gist, the biggest prizes are California with 415 pledged delegates, Texas with 228, and then there are six other states in the South, Virginia, North Carolina, Alabama, Tennessee, Arkansas, and Oklahoma, two more in the West, Utah and Colorado, three in the Northeast, Maine, Vermont, and Massachusetts, then lonely Minnesota in the Midwest, and then American Samoa will also caucus, and Democrats abroad will begin their voting process, which will end on the 10th. Let's start with what's probably the most interesting race tomorrow.
American Samoa.
American Samoa. Sorry. No, Texas.
Delicious.
Texas. So, Claire, what's happening in Texas?
Oh, boy. Well, a lot of Mike Bloomberg money in Texas. I think he has the most field offices there and is making a push, I think, to be kind of like the... This is one of the big delegate troves. This is where Mike Bloomberg has kind of planted his flag. If he's going to be a spoiler, he's going to be a spoiler in Texas.
Also, open primaries. So Republicans yes. can vote for Mike Bloomberg if they want to.
Correct. That said, like going back to something we were talking about earlier, who knows if voters are going to take Bloomberg seriously, right? Like maybe they will have seen him in the debates and be like, eh. Or maybe they will have seen Biden's performance in South Carolina and say, I have a better moderate option. So I'm not going to go for Bloomberg. But that said, you know, money and time in a state do get you places. So, you know, we can look to Biden's South Carolina win and say, like, okay, if you tend to your garden, it might grow. And perhaps Texas will bloom for, oh God, what a terrible metaphor. Perhaps Texas will bloom for Mike Bloomberg. Little blue bonnets. Yeah.
It seems to be a little bit of a question between the strength of Sanders with Latino voters so far and then maybe Biden with black voters and moderate white. How do we see that playing out? And how do we rate the race right now, Micah?
Oh, I think it's a very close race in Texas. And I wouldn't begin to guess kind of who has an advantage there. You know, in the polling average, we have both Sanders and Biden are up. Or have been climbing of late. Sanders leads overall 29% to 24%. And, you know, we have gotten some Texas polling. We had a poll today. We had a few yesterday. So it could be pretty close. Interestingly enough, Bloomberg, you know, was like steeply climbing for a while, got up to like 18, 19%. He's like leveled off down to like 17%, but he hasn't cratered there. And Warren is still at 12% there.
Can I ask an open primaries question? What do we think about the, I don't even know what to call it, the narrative that was going around that people were pushing for Republicans to vote in the Democratic primary and to vote for Bernie Sanders?
didn't seem to happen in South Carolina.
Carolina. Wasn't, yeah. I mean, yeah. So,
cause,
so,
because Trump explicitly said, "Oh, vote for Bernie."
Yeah.
There's always these storylines about mischief making, and it never happens.
People are earnest.
That might happen.
Well, it never happened in a meaningful and meaningfully
adjusted. Is Texas more wily than South Carolina?
But, you know, but Bloomberg being like an actual centrist as opposed to like a mainstream Democrat like Joe Biden, I mean, there might be Republicans and independents who are like, I actually would want Mike Bloomberg to be my president, so I'm going to vote for him in the primary in open primary states. Yeah, we don't know. I mean, it's so much easier to make the downside case for Bloomberg. But remember, you know, he's at, in a lot of these states, 15 or 16%, and that's before undecideds. He does have kind of a ground game. He may get some Mayor Pete supporters who don't go to Biden or someone else, right? I mean, I think there's almost no case where, like, Bloomberg wins five states, right? Is there a case where he kind of hits his polling averages and gets 200 delegates and then has some power as a broker, then maybe, sure. I mean, that's kind of a fairly decently likely scenario.
So right now, our model shows Biden with a 55% chance of winning the most votes in Texas and Sanders a 43% chance.
I buy that. That seems about right to me. It's almost a coin flip with Biden with a small edge. That makes sense.
Yeah, that kind of shows that. So if we have Biden up or down by 5 points in the raw polling average, then the model is figuring almost none of those polls are post South Carolina. Therefore, we're going to give a Biden a 5 point bounce, and it's a toss up. That's more or less what it's saying.
And we do believe that it's a 2-way race there. And while Bloomberg may do well, he's not in the running to actually win. Is that fair?
It would be kind of a surprise if Bloomberg won.
So here would be my prediction.
Love a prediction.
If Bloomberg wins a state on Super Tuesday, I think it'll be one of his stronger states that's less contested. Like, I do wonder a little bit on some of these states like Arkansas or Oklahoma,
where he's been spending a lot of money and nobody else is like super contesting.
Exactly.
Arkansas.
Right. Is that, that's where I would expect an unexpected Bloomberg win rather than Texas, where everybody's in the sandpit.
Okay, let's move on to California, which, as I mentioned, has 415 pledged delegates, the most populous state. What is it? If California were its own country, it'd have the sixth largest economy in the world. So is there any question who will win in California?
Yes.
There is.
Not much.
There's not okay.
There's basically a 1 in 10 chance that Sanders does not win, according to our forecast.
So 90% chance that he does win.
89.
Okay.
But 1 in 10.
This is a real lesson in probabilities for our listeners.
1 in 10.
Spread the good news.
Is, look, there are, how many states are voting on Super Tuesday? 14?
Something like that.
So in terms of probabilities, you know, you would expect a couple surprising results. Maybe California will go to Tulsi Gabbard.
Okay. Anyway, Claire, you've spent time reporting out the dynamics of the Democratic Party in California. What are the contours of the race there from the perspective of the leading candidates, but also just from the perspective of who California voters are?
Well, you know, I think we all have kind of a stereotype about Californians as being super liberal. And obviously, it's a state that is dominated by the Democratic Party and has been for essentially a couple decades. But there are establishment voters within that state. And I do think that there's room for a Biden surge in part because of that, right? Like, for instance, Dianne Feinstein. I always go back and forth about how to pronounce her name, and one of them is correct. You know, she's a pretty establishment Democrat who's been in office there for a really long time. But then again, you know, take Kamala Harris, who has not endorsed anyone since dropping out. Like, who would Kamala Harris vote for? I think is a really good stand-in.
Ooh, interesting.
For the California middle-of-the-road voter.
Joe Biden?
Questioning tone.
Why do you say that?
Well, I say that because she does not seem to be a Medicare for all populist progressive. The senator whose seat she took, Barbara Boxer, just endorsed Joe Biden. I know that the progressive left in California is not a huge fan of Kamala Harris,
correct,
her prosecutorial record, and just in general, her being more establishment, etc. So there are obviously Californians, quite loud Californians, who don't like that kind of politics.
Right.
Also, California is very wealthy.
Right.
And there are a lot of rich people who I don't necessarily think want to see an economic revolution.
So what I'm saying is, like, while Sanders is currently the leader in California, and we have this image of California as being, you know, this trove of liberal voters, which it is on some level, like lots of young people in the state, obviously a strength of Sanders. I do still think that there are a lot of Biden voters there. By the way, Pete Buttigieg's campaign, you know, had a certain amount of, you know, if he had made it to Super Tuesday, would have focused on California, would have looked to be kind of the, okay, not Sanders super liberal, not Biden super old school, but this kind of like nice young moderate in the middle. And as we've talked about before in this podcast, a lot of those voters might go to Biden. And again, I have not mentioned Elizabeth Warren in part because I am doubtful about voters seeing her as a viable candidate right now. So I'm kind of, I think we are all kind of speaking in a two-person race terms. Now, again, maybe there will be a surprise. Micah, you look like you have something to say about the potential for
just
a surprise.
It's just such a wild card. It's such a good question of like, do voters see Warren as a viable candidate right now? You would think no. She hasn't done well in any state, really, save for Iowa a little bit.
But you have like a lot of pro-Warren voices or pundits who are kind of like, you know, you just got to vote your conscience and you have to, you know, you have to ignore the polls and it'll just work out. You just have to vote for the person you think will make the best president, right?
What's wrong with that?
Well, it depends on how much of a preference you have between
Sanders and Biden,
right? If you're like, I'm relatively indifferent between them, so let's in fact take longer to make that decision and prolong it. And maybe there's a snowball's chance in hell that she can emerge as a compromise between them, right? I mean, it's not crazy, 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 crazy. It might be crazy, crazy.
That's a lot of qualifiers.
It's like we are showing a fairly large chance that there's no majority. We don't really know how that plays out, right?
Yeah.
It's not totally crazy to say that, hey, I want to be
As someone in my life cited back to me last night, well, 538 shows that no one winning is the most likely outcome right now. Which felt very like, okay.
Wait, somebody who knew you worked for 538 or somebody who didn't know?
Yes.
Okay. So is the real question here who will make it past the 15% threshold in California and who will make it past the 15% threshold in California?
Bernie Sanders, we predict, will make it past the threshold.
Okay. Biden, will he
Joe
make it
Biden
past?
Joe Biden is a...
close.
No, he's pretty safe at this point because, okay, like, even in the polls now, they're like pre-South Carolina, he's up to like 20% and he's going to get undecideds and Mayor Pete voters.
Yeah, the lower bound of Biden's 80% range is 19%.
Okay.
So, safe.
And then Warren and Bloomberg are very close to 15%. And whether they get there or not.
That's amazing. Bloomberg is forecasted to win an average of 15%.
And Warren is at 16.
Warren is at 16. And now, so there's a range there, but that's the average.
If you're Biden or Sanders, how do you want that to play out? Do you want Warren and Bloomberg to get above 15%? If you're Biden, you want Warren to get above 15%, but not Bloomberg?
Yes.
If they get...
I had to think about
that. I think so, yeah.
Just treat them as a collective item for a change.
Okay. Warren and Bloomberg?
Ooh. Warrenberg.
Well,
I think I went to high school with her.
That's
Blumen.
If you're
Warburg.
So if you're Bernie, you clearly do not want anyone else to get above 15%. If you're Biden, it's a little bit ambiguous because on the one hand, you actually lose some of your delegates. On the other hand, Bernie loses more because he'll probably have more, right?
Wait a second. So why doesn't Bernie want Bloomberg to get above 15%?
Because Bloomberg would then take delegates that Bernie would win most of.
Right, because there's not a redistribution of your second choices.
Right.
So, like, if Bloomberg doesn't get above 15%, then it just gets divided between Sanders and Biden.
Right.
So if Sanders wins, you know, whatever.
If it's Bernie, Sanders 40, Joe Biden 20, then Bernie is getting 2/3 of all the delegates in California. If Warren comes in and gets 15, then she takes away from that pile of which Bernie is getting 2/3. So that's a disadvantage for him.
But what if...
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was going to ask an insane question.
Well, now I really want you to go ahead.
What if Sanders... Or I actually kind of mean this, by the way. What if Sanders or Biden gets coronavirus? No, because they're no. I mean this. They're older candidates,
and they're touching.
They're touching so many people.
Oh my God!
I'm thinking about this. But what if that happens? Could one of their candidacies go completely down, or would people be like, "Oh, coronavirus isn't that bad"?
Claire. Also, would they be okay?
That too.
So
that goes without saying.
So sharp left turn there.
There's no coronavirus in the model.
Nate, does the model account for pandemic?
By the way, wash your hands. But I mean, I'm serious about this. Like, what if something weird like that happens? The guy who was running coronavirus, whatever, blah, 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 for Iran got coronavirus.
I was texting about this with my friend. If the Democratic primary comes down to Biden versus Bernie to go up against the general against Trump, then the chances of some health thing.
Yeah.
Are very high.
You know.
But to get us back on track for a second, can I ask a question about this hypothetical, which of among Biden and Bernie wants Warren or Bloomberg to do well? Wouldn't there be some dynamic for the district delegates where Bernie would want Bloomberg to do better because Bloomberg would do better in the type of districts where Biden would be more likely to win delegates?
Yeah, like Orange County.
Right. Or is that such a minimal...
I mean, I think you're overthinking it. It's like both simpler and more complicated, right? On the one hand, like...
You can't do that.
Okay. It's simpler because...
You know what's so funny? Is the Nate's first answer during this podcast, I thought to myself, I didn't say it out loud, but I was like, I'm waiting for the moment where Nate answers a question just like, there's really one way to look at this instead of, really, there are 6.5 levels to this. And then I thought he was just going to do it, be like, oh, you're overthinking this. This is, and then he was like, both simple and more complicated and a little in between, but there's uncertainty about that too. Sorry, Nate.
No, I mean, the simple way is like, you want everyone else to say under 15% because you get
want more
delegates for yourself that way, right? The complicated way is like, there are basically two vectors to watch on tomorrow.
Tuesday.
One of which is Bernie versus Biden. One of which is kind of Bernie and Biden versus everyone else. And I think of them as being relatively perpendicular to one another. If you're Bernie, let's say you have a relatively mediocre night against Biden, but that Warren and Bloomberg and Klobuchar totally flop and they're not getting any delegates, right? You know, your chances of a majority would go up.
I see.
Your plurality chances might go down, right? So how do you feel about that? How do you feel if you're Bernie Sanders about like winning a plurality but not a majority? You probably feel better about that if you're Joe Biden. You probably feel if I'm Joe Biden, then the party likes me well enough. You're likable enough, Joe Biden. So if I get a plurality of any kind,
I'm going to get the nomination.
Yeah. Whereas with Bernie, people may be like, well, I don't know.
Well, yeah. I think if Bernie gets a plurality, he's going to get the nomination.
But what I think it's a 38-36 plurality, right? Maybe not.
Then it's closer. But I think Nate's point is a really good one of how much do the other candidates get on Tuesday will go a long way towards determining whether anybody is able to reach a majority.
All right. So let's wrap up with California. And one thing to keep in mind as we get results tomorrow is that California is on Pacific time. They also have vote by mail. They also have a complicated way of allocating delegates. So it might be a while before we get results from California, but we'll have a good idea of how things are going. We'll probably even end up recording our reaction podcast before we have full results from California. So just keep that in mind. Anyway, let's move on to the rest of the states voting on Super Tuesday. But first, today's podcast is brought to you by Simply Safe. With home security, there are two ways you can go about protecting your home. There's the traditional way, where you wait weeks for a technician to do a messy installation that costs a small fortune. Or there's the other way, Simply Safe. Simply Safe is everything you need in a home security system. It's award-winning protection, the two-time winner of CNET's Editor's Choice Award. Simply Safe blankets your whole home in safety. You can get comprehensive protection for your entire home. Outdoor cameras and doorbells alert you to anyone approaching your home. Entry, motion, and glass breaking sensors guard inside. You barely notice it's there, but what's truly remarkable is you can set up the system all by yourself. Anyone can do it. It takes 30 minutes to an hour tops, and there's absolutely no trade-offs to your safety. And it's only 50 cents a day with no contracts. It's why The Verge calls Simply Safe the best home security system. Go to simplysafe.com/politics today, and you'll get free shipping and a 60-day risk-free trial. You've got nothing to lose. Go to simplysafe.com/politics. Again, that's simplysafe.com/politics. Today's podcast is also brought to you by Upstart. Getting into debt is easy, but getting out is hard, especially if your credit score isn't great. Thankfully, now there's Upstart.com, the revolutionary lending platform that knows you're more than just your credit score and offers smarter interest rates to help you pay off high-interest credit card debt. They actually reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter rate. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate. And the best part, once the loan is approved and accepted, most people get their funds the very next business day. Over 400,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards or meet their financial goals. Free yourself from the burden of high-interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. See why Upstart is top-ranked in their category with over 300 businesses on Trustpilot, and hurry to upstart.com/politics to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes. Again, that's upstart.com/politics. We're back, and the next most important region of Super Tuesday is the South generally. Virginia, North Carolina, Alabama, Tennessee, Arkansas, and Oklahoma. So, Claire, how would you describe the race in the South? And, of course, there are differences between those states, but they're more similar than, say, you know, Arkansas versus California.
Yeah. Joe Biden has always counted on Southern states on Super Tuesday to be a potential trove of delegates for him. You know, his campaign chairman is a black congressman from the South. They're hoping that those more moderate black voters will choose him and sort of run up the count in those places. Again, Mike Bloomberg is like a presence in those states. I believe he was in Alabama over the weekend or a couple days ago. I actually have an acquaintance from college who lives in Alabama now, and she was on Instagram being like, I'm from Mike Bloomberg, which I was like, oh, it's so weird to see, like, you know, it's the organic percolating of you know, probably a lot of advertising and stuff like that. The South, I think, is tougher for Bernie Sanders.
So Biden is more heavily favored in the Southern states.
There are different
in the deep South.
I was just about to say, there are different flavors of South. So, you know, someplace like North Carolina is more quote unquote New South, where it has more of those, you know, those cities, college towns, what is it, the Research Triangle, where perhaps that'll be more favorable to Sanders, that kind of thing. Virginia is a different kind of South.
On the topic of Virginia, it's one of those places where Democrats have targeted it pretty heavily for flipping districts in 2018 and also just kind of getting it squarely in the Democrats' column. I mean, how do we see those newly Democratic areas, particularly suburbs, voting in the primary?
There'd be question mark. They have generally been good for Warren and Buttigieg and Klobuchar, none of whom are terribly strong Southern candidates, nor are in a position where they have a lot of momentum. Obviously, Buttigieg dropped out. So it's kind of a question of, like, is that good for Bloomberg? Is that a place where Warren holds on and gets decent percentages of the vote? Or are those tactical voters who flip to Biden? These are people who are, like, usually stereotypically fairly high news consumption voters, right? They're watching cable news. They are reading newspapers. They're listening to podcasts. So they might be the ones who would say, okay.
High suburban voters listening to podcasts.
Hello. Upscale suburbs. Because that's what we're talking about in Virginia, which is a rich state. They might be the ones who might tactically shift to Joe Biden. But that's a big wild card, I would say.
Yeah. And actually, I think Virginia, among all the southern states, is probably the one that maybe Sanders has the best chance in.
Well, there's kind of two groups here, right? There's
like the Ozark South.
The Ozark South, although I think Oklahoma is arguably a Midwestern state, but we'll save that for another.
We've had that fight too many times on this podcast.
Those states, Tennessee, Arkansas, Sanders, Oklahoma, have not been polled very much at all. In theory, they're the whiter South, and they're like neither particularly great for Bernie because they're a little bit too conservative, but for Biden, they're also pretty white, right?
Yeah.
You know, our model actually has Bloomberg doing relatively well because you might win one of those states with like 23% of the vote or something, right? And because the campaigns are not spending as much focus there, maybe the advertising goes a longer way than in Virginia or North Carolina. And by the way, some pollsters are going to get on if there is a big Biden surge where things are kind of not really in their control, right? If I were a pollster, I would not want anywhere in the South except Texas to have a poll showing anyone other than Joe Biden ahead, which is not to predict that Joe Biden's going to like win all those states, but like I wouldn't feel great about a Virginia poll from 2 weeks ago showing Sanders up 4 or something.
But okay, Ozark South, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Tennessee. Well, Tennessee, I think Biden, Tennessee has a higher share of black voters. So
it's
maybe
still pretty white, right?
It's compared to Deep South, yes. But let's call those more of a three-way race between Biden, Bloomberg, Sanders, Deep South, Alabama, obviously, North Carolina to a lesser extent, Biden heavily favored, and then Virginia, you know, is probably somewhere in between those two groups for various reasons.
Okay, let's move on because we've got a lot of other regions to discuss. So let's power through the West, Utah and Colorado. Any questions there?
Sanders country.
All right, can we move on?
Yeah. Well, let me say five things,
but along three different vectors.
Subparagraph three, vector two. Colorado is
self-owning
in some ways. The stereotypical Bernie kind of state, right? You know,
at the same time, it loves its Hickenlooper.
At the same time, thank you, Galen.
Is this time for your beer metaphor to reemerge?
Michael Bennett. At the same time, it's very wealthy and upscale.
It's
so like,
craft beer.
Craft beer. So it could be like a good Elizabeth Warren state. If she were doing a little bit better, like if I had to pick one non-Massachusetts state for Warren to win.
Colorado.
It'd be Colorado, right? Utah is very young electorate. Actually, the Democrats in Utah are very progressive. It would seem very good for Bernie. But I don't know. Both these states, by the way, as is Minnesota, are having primaries for the first time. They're usually caucus states. And so that might make them a little bit harder to model. Maybe the primary electorate's a lot different than the caucus electorate.
It's weird that Colorado gave the world both Michael Bennett and Hickenlooper, John Hickenlooper.
Wait.
Why?
They're kind of similar.
No, I know. That's what I mean. They're like... It's just weird that you have kind of two interchangeable people come from this.
I love Colorado. It's a beautiful
state. Colorado's beautiful. Also, no shade at Hickenlooper or Bennett. They're great people, great public servants.
We should have our state draft.
We should.
Oh, my God. We'll put that also
behind the paywall. Moving on to the Northeast. We have Maine, Vermont, and Massachusetts. Maine and Vermont are going to Sanders. I've already called it even before Super Tuesday happened. Okay, Massachusetts.
Wait, don't get Maine so... Maine is a weird state.
Maine is the Kentucky of New England.
Maine, by the way, a potential first-round draft pick, according to Nate. Maine is a weird state. I would not necessarily count on... I mean, it obviously looks very Bernie-ish, right? But, like, it's done kind of unexpected things in the primaries before. We actually have Bernie with only a 70% chance of winning Maine.
Okay, so I retract. I do, however, already call the primary for Sanders in Vermont.
538 projects that Bernie Sanders has won the
Guys, we get in trouble with the ABC decision desk.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry. That was humor.
That was ABC standards.
That was humor and parody, a thing that we sometimes do on this podcast.
Massachusetts.
Speaking generously, yeah.
Massachusetts. Anybody want to make a call?
Why?
Bernie has been ahead in the polls there. Not by much, but he's been ahead in the polls there. He had a big rally in Boston over the weekend.
Pop quiz hotshot. Why is Klobuchar more of a favorite in Minnesota than Warren is in Massachusetts?
Because in Minnesota, Klobuchar is ahead in the polls, and in Massachusetts, Warren is behind in the polls.
No shit. I'm asking why that
her
is.
Her popularity sunk after her first election, right? Haven't we talked about this before? How like Warren performed worse in her reelect?
Yes.
Warren
is just less popular.
Yeah, it's a residual effect.
I mean, Klobuchar is like an overwhelmingly popular
senator.
I also think
when you become a national figure as a senator, maybe you
Yeah,
take
that's
some
true.
Hits.
And Klobuchar really hasn't become a national figure.
I mean... Trying to be nice here.
All right. And that brings us to Minnesota, where...
This is when Nate gets to use his Minnesota accent.
Minnesota?
That is not a Minnesotan accent.
You say the state name like a poser.
Minnesota?
Yeah.
Okay.
Minnesota.
That's how you say it.
Wait,
how do you...
Nevada.
Minnesota.
Nevada.
Minnesota.
Nevada. I get so much Nevada, 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 Nevada. Everybody happy now? Leave me the fuck alone.
Yes, Micah.
How do you say?
It's time to start getting real.
How do you say the country spelled Q-A-T-A-R?
Qatar.
I used to live there. You can say it multiple ways.
Yeah, I defer. I
think it depends on what country you're from. If, okay, that's the, yeah. If you're Arab. If you're non-Arab and you live there, you probably say Qatar or Qatar or Qatar if you're British.
I like the British.
Can I just say, in general, you should pronounce things the way they're meant to be pronounced, without a doubt. But people who correct other people's mispronunciations, to me, are no better than like the people who are like,
did you mispronounce? Actually, mispronounce?
It was Nevada. Actually, it's Frankenstein's monster.
But it's mispronunciation. Did you do that on purpose?
What did I say?
Mispronunciation.
I didn't do it on purpose. I'm not that clever, Claire.
But I corrected you, so I am that person.
Yeah,
you are. So it's an indictment of me.
It is.
So, Minnesota.
Actually, it's Minnesota.
Going to Klobuchar or not going to Klobuchar? What are the odds?
Amazing Amy.
Klobuchar has a 3-in-5 chance. She's a 55% favorite.
How will moderates in Minnesota read what they're supposed to do if they're behaving tactically? Will they say, okay, well, Biden...
They'd vote for Biden.
Well, by the way, Biden's not going to win Minnesota, so what they'd rather do is have Klobuchar win Minnesota and then prevent Sanders from getting another W in the press on Super Tuesday.
W's versus delegates, because Biden is forecasted to win an average of 16% of the vote in Minnesota. He's very close to that threshold, and so from a delegate perspective...
I take it back. They should vote for Klobuchar and assume that she will probably drop out and give her delegates to Biden, right?
Well, so this is kind of why...
Because Sanders is second.
Right. This is kind of what I was trying to get at with the Klobuchar versus Warren question is, but ultimately the answer you guys gave is right, which is Klobuchar is super popular in Minnesota. Warren is less popular in Massachusetts. But also there's like a tactical strategic voting inflection point where I don't think Biden in the polls has enough support where it would make any sense for strategic voters in Minnesota to say, let's all get behind Biden so then he can beat Sanders.
But the delegates could get a 15%, which you might not otherwise, right? It's very close, actually, Biden in Minnesota.
But do you think people are thinking that in that detail over it?
Probably. Let's look at this from the Sanders' campaign point of view, right? His campaign has spent a fair amount of time in Minnesota and Massachusetts to get wins in those states when the delegates might not be affected that much, right? Because he wants to kill off the campaigns of Warren and Klobuchar, and he wants a narrative that it's Bernie, or at the very worst, it's Bernie and Biden, and not, oh, it's a big mess and four different people won states and it's a contested convention, because that clearly, like, you know, that makes it hard for him. And so I think his campaign has been smart about that, and I think that does show that, like, winning matters. I think they're probably correct in that assessment.
Okay, to wrap things up, American Samoa and Democrats abroad who begin voting on Super Tuesday.
I mean,
Sanders is up in American Samoa.
Well,
is there anything else
we have no
say?
Idea about
we
American
Samoa. We have no
Samoa.
Idea. Okay.
Have you ever met a Democrat abroad?
Yes.
They're probably the type of person who actually maybe likes Warren a lot, or likes
Bernie Sanders' brother.
Bernie
I think he was like a leader of the Democrats
abroad. He won Democrats abroad bigly in 2016. You know,
we need to end this podcast.
Okay.
Have you ever met a Democrat while abroad?
I took that to mean, have you ever met a Democrat while abroad? I don't know that I've ever met a Democrat abroad who votes as a Democrat abroad in primaries.
Yeah, because I've met a Democrat abroad. I haven't met a Democrat
Democrats abroad is a good state, so to speak, for Bernie.
Actually, Nate, it's not a state.
I understand that.
It's more a collection of people, a diaspora.
Why isn't Democrats abroad a state?
Oh.
51st state.
All right. So final question here, and then we're going to wrap things up. Who do you think will emerge from Super Tuesday looking the best?
538. I think we're really going to nail our coverage, live blog, video, podcast. I think people will be really happy.
Good answer.
All right. Nate?
If you want to watch CNN and get that answer, get that answer.
Go to CNN.
Go watch CNN. We're here to observe what the American public does with their votes.
We don't try to predict things here at 538, Galen.
News to me.
All right, so you think it's close?
I think
yes.
The safest bet is probably that Super Tuesday will further solidify the primary as a two-way race between Biden and Sanders.
Boop.
All right, let's leave things there. Thank you, Nate.
Thank you, Galen.
Thank you, Claire.
Thanks.
Thank you, Micah.
Thank you.
And again, check out our live blog on 538.com and also check out Nate on ABC News and ABC News Live, where he'll be giving you all the deets from the very fancy studio upstairs from us.
Nate, can you give me a shout out on ABC News tomorrow night?
There are a lot of people that deserve shout outs. One of whom is you.
Can you just imagine, Nate, like...
Who else deserves a shout out?
That Virginia win is really big for Sanders. His chances in our model increased to 61% of a majority of pledged delegates. Also, shout out to Micah Cohen. That would be awesome.
My name is Galen Druk. Tony Chow is in the control room. You can get in touch by emailing us at podcasts@538.com. You can also, of course, tweet at us with questions or comments. If you're a fan of the show, leave us a rating or review in the Apple Podcast Store.
But not both.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.